Welcome to another Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.
Happy New Year to everyone, to you, Rick, and all our listeners.
And to the listeners, Happy New Year, and to you, Robert.
Now, I think it's about time that we talk about umpiring in cricket and baseball, because apparently you've got a new gig doing some umpiring in the local Power Proselyte cricket.
Well, gee, your contacts are good, Robert. Yes, I've decided that I'd like to give something back to the game that I've played and loved all my life, and so I have got my appropriate attire and will be firing a few batsmen on Saturday.
Now, obviously, you've done a bit of umpiring in your time. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to umpire a game.
Well, yes, I have done quite a lot of umpiring, actually. After I finished and retired from playing the game, I was actually living down in the Port Elliot area, and decided to become a qualified umpire together with another friend of mine, Ross Britton, and we drove up to Adelaide Oval each Wednesday, as I recall, until we became qualified umpires. And then I took up umpiring down in the Great Southern Cricket League in their A-grade area there, and so I've done a fair bit of umpiring. I really enjoy it. I think the advantage of having played the game makes it easier to umpire by heaps and heaps.
Mm-hmm. But then on the other side of the coin, umpiring gives you a different perspective of the game, and bringing your knowledge as a player in definitely helps. But does umpiring sort of give you that extra perception about how the game's played?
Yes and no. I think because I'd played so much, and I guess had to deal with umpires while I was playing as a player, and of course, as my mother used to say, I was never out. So I didn't have any problem with umpires at all. And I think basically in my entire career, which was many, many years, very rarely did I even perceive that umpires made mistakes. And I have no doubt whatsoever that they don't deliberately do it if they do. And they are only human after all.
Now, obviously the most controversial decision is LBW, because as a batter, you've got a different perspective, you face on, whereas the umpire is watching the flight of the ball and the line of the ball. How much difference can you gain from being an umpire compared to being a batter with an LBW decision?
Well, yes, you are right, but I do believe that there's a simple principle which I think batsmen are aware of, and I think umpires in the main are as well, and that is that immediately the ball is pitched outside the leg stump, it wouldn't matter if it was going to knock over all three, it's not out. And I think that's when you make an absolute decision that you don't even have to think any further about it. And I think the area where people get into strife, particularly in the modern game, is where they're playing sweep shots and trying to sweep things that are pitched perhaps well and truly inside the leg stump, and that's where perhaps more LBW decisions are being given out. But I think most batsmen are fully aware of if the ball's pitched outside the leg stump, then you're not in strife.
Okay, now tell us the most controversial decision that you've been involved in, or the most unusual decision you've been involved in as an umpire.
I think probably the most unusual, or at least the most pressured decision, was in a semi-final in the Great Southern League, where it was the last pair and they needed two runs to win. The ball was fielded and thrown to the bowler's end, which I was at, and for the fielding side, it was very unfortunate that in attempting to take the ball, the bowler actually dislodged the bail, and so therefore, although the guy would have been run out, I gave it not out, because in fact it wasn't the ball and or the hands with the ball in it that broke the stumps. And because I think I'd played and maybe hopefully I was in the correct position, it was quite obvious to me that it was a clear-cut decision. But when I spoke to the other fellow who was umpiring, he thought it would have been very difficult. And I guess he wasn't at the same angle as I was, obviously. But that's probably the most interesting decision I've ever had to make under pressure.
Yeah, one thing about when a fielder sort of breaks the bows and he hasn't got the ball, he can still get the player run out if he can pick up the stump and hold the stump with the ball before the batsman makes his ground, you can still get an out.
Oh, you can, as long as, well, you've explained it particularly well, Robert, which is very good for a baseballer. You do have to have this. You've got to remove the stump from the ground, but you must have it removed with the ball and the hand. So therefore, it's almost a two-hand performance, because let's put it this way: if you picked up the stump out of the ground with the left hand and you had the ball in your right hand, then it wouldn't be out.
I have played a little bit of cricket. I played some for Riverside in the B grade, and in those types of competition, the batting side sort of does the umpiring. And I remember we were playing this team, and we were well in front, and the other team were 9 wickets down, and we were throwing all our bowlers, but the batsmen just kept sort of standing in front so that it hit their pads, and of course the umpire would never give them LBW. So the acting captain of the day asked me to come on and bowl. Of course, I'm not a bowler, and it's the only time I ever bowled for Riverside, and I threw a couple of lollies up there, and fortunately the batter went for it on the third ball, and he dollied it straight back to me, so caught him bowl. So how are those for bowling for you? Thank you very much, umpires.
Unbelievable, Robert. There'd have to be a trick to why you could possibly get a wicket, having seen you. I doubt whether you could bowl a hoop downhill.
Well, I have to agree with you on that one, but luck's a fortune.
It is indeed.
Now, what other aspects of umpiring do you get the most enjoyment out of?
Oh, I think the thing I enjoy most of all is that I feel, dare I say, quite confident in umpiring, and so you don't have to act like an overgrown parking inspector or whatever. And I find it very, very pleasant to be able to communicate with the players and get on with the players. But by that I mean that, you know, if a guy's creeping up and is even possibly did bowl a no ball, rather than absolutely ping him, I always use the method of, hey, listen, pal, you're right up on the line, you know, how about, you know, moving your marker back, 5 centimetres or something. And I think they respect it, and therefore, in a sense, we all become mates without ridiculously overdoing the friendship. But I think if you treat... I have the philosophy that I like to treat the players the way that I would like them to treat me.
Yes, now let's get on a little bit about baseball umpiring. It's similar in a lot of regards. I mean, you're talking about the no-ball situations. In baseball, you have what's called a balk, which is an illegal pitch. And basically, a pitcher will attempt to do something unusual to gain an advantage to pick a runoff. And in those circumstances, it's fine to call a balk. But especially inexperienced players and young kids sometimes balk without really meaning to. Under most of those circumstances, if he's not looking for an advantage, again, I'll just have a little bit of a chat with him, and it's fairly well accepted that you can keep the game going without being over-officious.
I totally agree. So basically, it sounds as though we operate under the same concept, and as I said earlier, I think players respect it and respect you because of it, rather than as being totally over the top with officialdom.
Mm-hmm. Now, beside the balk, obviously the other controversial decision is infield fly, because not a lot of people understand that. But basically, you have to have runners on first and second and less than two out. And when the batter hits a ball up in the air in the infield and it's easily catchable by an infielder, the umpire calls infield fly, which means the batter's out and the runners don't have to sort of advance. It's to stop the fielder from deliberately dropping the ball to get two players out. Now, there was a situation which absolutely amazed me. It was the first time I'd ever thrown a player out of a game. And what had happened is the particular batter, who happened to be an umpire himself, had a situation with runners on first and second and less than two out, and he bunted the ball and he popped it up to the pitcher and he kept yelling at me, infield fly, infield fly. But on the infield fly rule, there is a situation that if a player bunts, he gives up that ability to be able to call out on an infield fly. Now, this guy just abused me and abused me and abused me, so I had to throw him out the game. But after the game, there was a beer on the counter for me and an apology from him, because he looked the wall up and he realised he was wrong.
Oh, well, there you go. There's a moral to the story afterwards. At least he was good enough to acknowledge that he was wrong, which is a great credit to him.
And I think in a lot of my umpiring, I umpire from behind the pitcher. So obviously the loopy balls and the ones you're not quite sure whether they've dropped down into the strike zone or they've fallen before the strike zone. So there is a bit of controversy in calling that. So my philosophy has always been be as consistent as you can, because even if you're wrong, if you're consistent, the teams can adjust and there can be no complaints if you're consistent.
Oh, yes. I totally agree. And that occurs in cricket, I guess, as well, in terms of consistency of not so much where the ball bounces, but particularly in no balling and things like that. I think consistency is everything. We see it very poorly demonstrated with three umpires in a football game these days.
Yeah, that you're dead right with that. And the good thing about baseball and cricket, you have an umpire that's the main umpire. Like in cricket, the one that's at the bowler's end, he would have the final decision. In baseball, the one that's the chief umpire would have the final decision, whereas in football, you've got three of them sort of all been a little bit inconsistent, and there's no rule of thumb where one person takes charge. And I suppose that's where the more umpires you have without someone that's actually in charge, it makes it more difficult.
It does indeed. Absolutely agree. I think slightly off the subject, but still on the subject, is going to be this upcoming tour of India, where the Indians, being the all-powerful cricketing body of the world now, they refuse to play test cricket with reviews. So we'll be back to umpires actually earning their money.
Well, I totally disagree with technology taking over, because the human element is one of the things that makes playing sport fun. You can argue, you can disagree or whatever, but to have a machine tell you this is the way it is, it doesn't really prove it is the way it is, because even when they do the reviews, it has to be sort of more than it has to be virtually no doubt at all, but you never know sort of what a ball's going to do. You look at Shane Warne, I'm sure there's a few reviews they might have called on him and they may not have given it, whereas the naked eye and the people watching it would call it out because it was obviously out, whereas a machine might be too technical not to allow for the spin of the ball or whatever.
Again, I agree. I think one of the things that they probably don't want us to know is that whether these magnificent machines can actually interpret that the ball was going to land on the seam and deviate, or was it going to spin, or what. You know, the fact is, I don't believe these machines can do that, and I think probably it's a lot to do with media and television that they've introduced these things for whatever. I'm not sure that it's excitement, but some people like to see reviews. But, you know, with all due respect to the tragedies of war, when they drop bombs supposedly in places and accidentally hit hospitals, etc., with supposedly the greatest technology in the world, then it makes the ball tracking device seem somewhat questionable, I would have thought, in terms of its unique ability to understand everything.
Well, you only really have to look at speed cameras with the police and the amount of times they've got to recalculate the speed cameras and people sort of appeal and they win the appeals. When you look at that type of situation, you put that technology in the sporting field, they're the be-all, end-all. They say you're out or they say you're not out, and that's it.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I honestly think that, as I've said very much earlier in our talk, I played a lot of cricket, and I don't think umpires, in my experience, make too many mistakes.
No. Well, that ends our first show for 2017.
Now, listen, just before we go, Robert, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
What do you do with an elephant with three balls?
An elephant with three balls?
An elephant with three balls.
I have absolutely no idea. What do you do, Rick?
You walk him and pitch to the rhino.
Oh, gee. That's
I honestly thought you'd get that. You're a baseball man too.
That's one up on you, Rick. This is the Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.